Welcome to Directly Speaking, a direct-to-consumer marketers podcast. Our podcast features marketing leaders in the direct-to-consumer and e-commerce space. We get to learn a little bit about their brands and the stories behind them, compare notes on trends and challenges in the industry, learn how they approach their marketing journey, and hopefully a little bit about them personally. I'm host Marcus Lancaster, head of direct-to-consumer strategy at Quad, and I'm excited about today's guest, David Menefee, CMO of Terrakeet. Dave is a purpose-driven, enthusiastic leader faithfully committed to developing those around him. With a fascinating career that includes time in the U.S. Naval Academy and the Marine Corps, Procter & Gamble, Centene, the CMO Syndicate, and Menefee's Take, his own consulting business, not to mention a TED Talk, Dave has a breadth and wealth of experience across many industries. Dave, thanks so much for joining us today.
So happy to be here, Marcus. It's going to be fun, or it's going to be awful, but it's going to be one of the other.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's if we're not having fun, what are we in this job for?
Exactly.
All right. Well, first of all, let's talk about this. How in the heck did you get from the U.S. Naval Academy to be in the CMO?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I could not have predicted it on the front end. I grew up in Connecticut in the Reagan 80s, and you know, watched Top Gun and read Tom Clancy, and became fascinated with military service, and really thought I wanted to be a submarine officer. I only applied to engineering schools. You know, I was deep in the STEM fields, and I got to the Naval Academy in the first couple of weeks. I was looking around at the submarine officers. I'm like, I don't think this is a good fit for me culturally. And pretty quickly realized that the Marine Corps was just a better cultural fit for me. So I took a commission in the U.S. Marine Corps, served as an artillery officer for 7 years in the mid to late 90s, all peacetime stuff. But about 5 years into my marriage to my senior prom date, we looked at each other and said, you know, I've been gone for like 3 out of the last 5 years. This might not be the right long-time lifestyle, the right lifestyle choice for us. So I decided to resign from the Marine Corps and take a crack at life in corporate America. And Procter & Gamble has a great junior military officer recruiting program. I entered P&G through that route. And really didn't know anything about marketing, but I knew that brand management was the core function for P&G. And so that's how I wound up in marketing. And it just so happened that my undergraduate major is English, but I got a
bachelor's. Mine too, by the way.
Yeah, but I earned a bachelor of science because of the math, science, engineering core curriculum at the Naval Academy. So I probably, unlike you, I have a BS in English.
And my BS is in music.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. And, you know, English and science, creativity and data analytics is a perfect fit for the marketing function. We know that marketers have to solve problems creatively and analytically. We have to be empathetic as well. So whole brain people tend to do very well in the marketing field. And that's kind of how I wound up in marketing. How I wound up in the C-suite is an extension of that story, which is I was having fun at P&G, was there for 12 years working on the pet food business. And if you like watching dogs work and watching dogs run, you know, Eukanuba is a great brand to work on. That's where I was at the time. And I received a call from an executive recruiter saying, hey, we've got an opportunity for you in St. Louis, a city I'd never been to, at Centene, a company I'd never heard of, doing Medicaid and Medicare, managed care. And I didn't know the difference between the two programs, but the CEO knew that the Affordable Care Act had passed. It was not yet implemented, and he wanted to bring in a consumer packaged goods trained marketing leader to professionalize the function inside the company and get us ready to go to market on the health insurance marketplace product. I spent 9 years at Centene. I started as the chief marketing officer. We were $5 billion in revenue. And I finished 9 years later as the chief experience officer there with $113 billion in revenue. So just a massive growth story.
Fantastic. What a story.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was really cool because, you know, coming out of a military background and high school and college team sports background, I love building organizations and developing people. And we took our department from 12 to 220 people over that time period, adding capability, adding capacity, and really making sure we had the right cultural mindset to go to market and win. So wow. I still have a couple of years to fill in the gap on how I got to Terokee. And I was basically taking some time off. People from my network started calling me saying, "Hey, Dave, can you help us with some strategy work or some product positioning work?" I'm like, "Yeah." And I kind of fell into fractional chief marketing officer roles. And I did that for a couple of years solo, and then hooked up with a dozen other experienced CMOs that were doing fractional work at the CMO syndicate. And then last month, a longtime client of mine, I've been working with Terokee for over 2 years, decided that they didn't want just a piece of me anymore. They wanted all of me. And so that's how I wound up at Terokee, which is a very different company than Centene. Centene was Fortune 50, over 100 billion publicly traded. This is a privately held company, under 100 million in revenue, but ready to really drive growth for ourselves and our customers.
All right. Well, there's a lot to get into here. Let's now switch direction and go and start with where you are now, because I was very interested in our conversation about what you guys do at Terokee. Why don't you talk, because I'm guessing that many of our audience haven't heard of you. Why don't you talk a little bit about what you guys do today?
Yeah, so the reason why Terokee exists is to connect brands with their audiences in moments that matter. And we do that throughout the consumer journey online. So we would describe ourselves as a performance marketing, insights, services, and technology partner. Every word I just used there has a very specific, meaning. Performance means we can predict and measure what we can do on behalf of our customers. Marketing is the field in which we operate. We generate insights based on online consumer behavior, understanding search queries and kind of the universe of search queries inside our partners' universe of participation. We provide services that includes generated content and publishing, and we're undergirded by proprietary technology. We have a proprietary predictive AI model that can help project how a customer can do 18 months from now if they kind of partner with us and undertake the things that we recommend. And we've got a generative AI model that's not trained on everything like ChatGPT. It's a large language model that's been trained specifically on content that performs online to help create those connections with brands and their audiences. And we call the category owned asset optimization. We think of it as a strategic way to think about online assets and drive engagements and relationships. It comes out of kind of the more historical SEO search Yes. engine optimization business, which we kind of think of as more tactically and transactionally motivated.
And if I could just pause you right there, that's really what I want to take a few minutes to dive into, is what's the difference? How do you see the difference between owned assets optimization and SEO? I think that's going to be very interesting to our audience.
Yeah. So when I took the title at Centene of chief experience officer rather than chief marketing officer, I kind of looked at my team and said, okay, let's define the experience continuum. And we really think that there's three layers to it. The first is transaction. If you go to a baseball game, you need to buy a ticket that's not counterfeit that will get you in through the door. And you don't really give the brand any credit for doing a transaction well, but you will punish the brand if they can't do a transaction well.
Yes.
The second layer is engagement. Am I willing to read an article or watch a video about the new prospect for my team? That's engagement. And relationship is when I'm wearing the gear, I'm gifting the gear, I might get a tattoo for the team. I'm in a relationship with that brand. And it seems to be easier for entertainment properties, including sports entertainment properties, to get into a relationship with their users or their fans. But we think that just about every brand has the opportunity to build engagements in relationships and do it well online. What we've seen historically with SEO, and this goes back 20 years when, you know, people were just building backlinks to kind of game the Google algorithms. SEO efforts tend to be focused from the brands out. Here's my brand identity. Here's my brand assets. Here's the language that I want to use. And I'm going to optimize for search for those brand things that I really want to push. And they tend to be good at driving transactions.
Got it.
Owned asset optimization is really taking a more strategic look at the consumer journey. And the consumer journey can kind of operate at three broad levels. One is I'm just doing research. I want to take a trip to Europe. I'm going to research Europe and places to go in Europe. Next, I want to solve a problem. I've decided based on my research that I'm going to go to Italy. But I only have 10 days. There's only a limited amount of things that I can see. So help me develop itineraries to go to Italy. And then I finally get to, you know, it's time to buy stuff. I got to buy an airline ticket. I got to book hotels, et cetera. So if you're an airline company, you might focus on that last thing, buying the ticket. If that's where you first interact with the consumer, then you're operating transactionally and you're kind of commoditized unless there's a prior relationship with the airline. The user is going to look for cheapest price or a combination of price and kind of time, you know, to take off, et cetera. But if you had been that airline company and you had helped do the research, here's the things that you can do in Europe or to solve the problem. Here's how you should plan a trip specifically to Italy. By the time that they've helped with that research transaction and solve the problem in an engaging way, then they win the relationship when it comes time to choose the airline ticket. And that broader level of strategic thinking rather than tactical thinking is what we believe sets OAO apart from SEO. SEO and content publication is necessary in today's world, but in order to win and drive incremental growth, it's not sufficient. You know, layering the strategy of OAO on top of the tactical execution of SEO is where the brands that we've worked with have really figured out how to catalyze their growth.
And it makes perfect sense. And I tell you what, you get top marks for the best in the analogies. I love your analogies. They're great. So I'm guessing your customer looks like somebody with, generally speaking, a high LTV more than a more transactional type customer.
Yeah. So we've done really well with high lifetime value and high consideration products and services. You know, the first brand I worked on was Charmin. There's probably not a lot of benefit to the bath tissue category for going all in on OAO, but maybe the art of shaving could, right? If you think about the lifetime value of what the blades and razors category looks like and how men at different times in their life think about shaving and the relationship with their beard and their facial hair, that could be a great, you know, game-changing way in. Certainly in more durable goods, you know, washing machine, you know, big appliances in the house, and certainly automobiles would be a great, great partners for us, and we could help them out for sure.
Gotcha. That's yeah. Makes really good sense. When you're sharing with a potential partner the differences between OAO and SEO, what are some of the challenges that you face these days in terms of getting them to understand or value your services?
One of the big challenges I've come across is the challenge of budget. So as marketers, you know, we're very sensitive to budget. And we've kind of got two buckets of budget that we think about. One is the sales and marketing budget, and I'm really interested in finding attribution and measuring ROI or ROAS or whatever I'm measuring. And then I've got my cost of doing business budget, which is FTEs.
Yes.
And most companies that are doing SEO and content in-house are doing it via their cost of doing business, their FTEs.
Yes. And
so they tend not to evaluate how well their online assets are performing from an organic perspective. They monitor a lot paid search, and they monitor a lot, buys, on connected TV and over the top television, So all that working dollar assessment is where the CMO's attention often goes, and they're not paying attention to the cost of doing business and kind of ignoring the fact that there is the opportunity to measure how well you're doing there and predict how well you're doing there. And that's where we can help our partners understand, how you can both predict and measure and improve your performance online in the relationships that you're creating with your users.
For a smaller direct to consumer brand, what are some recommendations you might have as they look at their own version of OAO or however they're approaching it? What are some watch outs or recommendations you might have?
Yeah. So when I started with Procter & Gamble at the end of 1999, our CEO was a guy named Dirk Jager, and he had just started. He had a big mandate to get the company to stretch, speed, and innovate. That caused us to look internally. And by my second quarter with the company, we had two quarters of misses and had lost a third of our market capitalization. And Dirk didn't last very long. And he was replaced with A.G. Laffley, who came in and said, listen, we need to win the first moment of truth, and we need to win the second moment of truth. The first moment of truth is in the store. Is somebody going to pick up and buy the product? The second moment of truth is, how does that product perform? And then obviously, as a marketing company at P&G, we said, okay, there's a zero moment of truth, which is before, right? It's the influence before the purchase. And so what AG did was help us focus externally. What does the consumer want and need? What problems are they trying to solve that they haven't even thought about trying to solve yet? And then how are we answering those questions for them? How are we performing? And he was basically saying, hey, market research, do your job, bring in the insights. Hey, brand management, do your job, marry the insights with product. Hey, product development, do your job, understand how your technology is meeting the needs of the consumer.
Sure.
And so this is a long-winded way, Marcus, of answering your question, which is, I think a lot of brands spend a lot of time thinking about themselves. What's their product offering? What are their brand standards? As opposed to thinking about the customer. And so the principles of human-centered design indicate that we need to think, how might we solve whatever problem is that the consumer is trying to solve those things? And guess what? Organic search is a great way to understand what problems consumers are trying to solve. Now, in our political environment right now, there's been a lot of issues with poll accuracy. And, as a patient talking to your physician for your annual exam, there's some level of maybe not telling the truth at how much you actually drink.
How much do I drink?
Or how much you actually exercise. And, polls, people lie in polls, and people lie to their doctors. You know where people don't lie?
Where?
To the Google search bar.
Ah.
Like, have you ever typed in something in the Google search bar that you weren't actually trying to look for?
You're right.
So the power of, what Terakee can do is look at the total addressable market of queries, searches for a category. you know, and that's our partners as well as their competitors, and understand hundreds of thousands and if not millions of searches related to that category. We're not just trying to pop for, you know, top 10 words. We're looking at the universe of searches that might apply to this product or service and brands that we have to offer. And we can make recommendations and produce content that allow us to get farther up that consumer journey, back into the research phase as opposed to the I'm ready to buy phase, in order to create that relationship and have a greater chance of winning at that first moment of truth, which is at the time of purchase.
The message then to an asset brand is don't think about yourself, but even if you don't have the resources for tremendous outside investment, right, you should absolutely be thinking about what are the questions your customers are asking and answer them before their questions.
Yeah, that's right. About 15 years ago or so, for a P&G kind of annual marketing meeting, we had guest speakers, the chief marketer and the chief engineer for Corvette. Marcus, have you ever seen a TV ad for a Corvette?
Not that I'm aware of.
No, you never have, because they don't do it.
They don't need it.
They don't need it because they go, both of them go to Corvette shows all year round, all around the country. They were listening to enthusiasts all the time. And 15 years ago, which was just about the time that the smartphone was coming out, that was the only way that you could actually get, you know, word of mouth information firsthand about a product like Corvette. Now I'm sure they're doing something different, because in 2024, you can find out all sorts of information, you know, through all sorts of content all over the internet, whether it's on Reddit posts or, you know, on other social media activation, et cetera. And so that's all rich area to go mine for what are our users really talking about, you know, about our brand or for our product, for our category.
Wow. It's interesting. And the way you connect the dots to your experience between P&G and Terrakeet are fascinating. Tell me what was different or the same about when you were at Centene, obviously overseeing some exponential growth there.
Yeah, so the Marine Corps and P&G are both promote from within, hierarchical organizations, highly committed to training and development and to acronym usage. I think P&G was actually worse than the military.
Really?
Oh yeah, it was brutal, man. Like on my first week, I had to get like a glossary of all the terms. But you know, P&G is a predictable growth company, right? They want to grow in the 3-5%
yes.
range, and they can never miss. And if you've got a brand like Tide or Pampers, if you miss, the company misses, right? So there's a lot of risk mitigation activity and process that allows excellence. You know, the risk reward of that is the risk is that you can't grow exponentially.
Yes.
Centene was, you know, an exponential growth company, you know, 30% CAGR for 10 years, a higher growth rate than Amazon or Apple throughout that time period.
Wow.
It's from a smaller base. I just want to caveat that it was a much smaller base, but still
put that way, it's amazing.
But still high growth. And, you know, the challenge we had at Centene from an org development perspective is that 70% of our employees had been with the company less than 2 years every year. And that's not because we were turning people over, like, you know, cashiers at a big box store. It's because we had to hire. It was constant hiring.
Yes.
And so putting in place a mechanism to help ensure that the culture we were protecting was the culture we wanted was super important at Centene.
Okay.
And then also getting to standardization. So when I joined the company, we had 12 subsidiaries, you know, each state was its own wholly owned subsidiary, independently operated with some independent governance. because Medicaid is a state program. You know, it's governed and funded by the state government. And so each state wanted to, were really proud of their independence and wanted to do their own thing. And my point of view was, it's great that you have to operate differently. And I hear you that you're a special snowflake. Everybody has told me and all of the subsidiaries that you're a special snowflake. That's great. I understand. I get it. But how about we focus on the things that are common? You're all white. You yeah. all accumulate.
Yeah.
You all melt at 32 degrees. You all need to be plowed or salted or removed somehow. So if we can get to a standard that that lives at the snow level and allow you customization at the flake level, then that's great, because then I have, you know, 26 laboratories where if someone's not abiding by the standard, there's only one of two possibilities. Number one, they're less efficient, in which case they have to go back to the standard. Or two, they're more efficient, in which case they've just uncovered a new standard.
Yeah.
Right. Right. But if everybody's doing their own thing, there's no way that you can search or reapply. There's no way that you can get to scale efficiency. And, you know, here at Terrakeet, we're, you know, quickly growing customer. We've got a quickly growing customer base, and we've got customers that have different needs. And so, you know, our solutions for each customer looks a little bit different. And, you know, we're trying to figure out, okay, how do we get to the place where we can standardize process and procedures and make sure that what we're learning on one customer account will benefit our other customers as well.
I got it. All right. Well, let's look to the future a little bit there, because that leads to a good question. In this OAO/SEO, this kind of space, what do you see happening in the next, you know, couple years, 2-3 years?
Massive change. you know, everybody's obviously for the last 18 months, everybody's talking about AI and how the nature of search is potentially going to change, and we're just going to talk to our co-pilot rather than do a more manual search. So, you know, we, you know, at Terrakeet, we've got to stay up on the trends. You know, we have been working with large language models for a while. We want to stay on top of that. We will stay on top of that, and we can help our partners stay on top of those changes in search and in use behavior. And I think, you know, all of us have to be somewhat aware of what's going on in terms of tech trends. You know, in 2000, you know, tech trends really weren't that important. I mean, Seth Godin was still talking about permission marketing as if opting into an email is not still interruptive. I mean, Marcus, how many emails in your inbox a day do you receive that you delete without reading? Because you're like, I only opted in to get the discount that one time, and I just have been too lazy to unsubscribe, or I have unsubscribed, but they won't unsubscribe me, right? And so this idea of, you know, interruptive marketing, which has been around since, you know, the 30s and soap operas, you know, P&G invented the category, to permission marketing in the early 2000s, really with the advent of the cell phone, the smartphone, that's really changed. And, you know, so what we like to say is OAO is really about reception marketing. You know, consumers are receptive to messages when they're searching. Right. At P&G, we used to talk about content is king, but context is queen. And the reality is putting those two things together helps you build the kingdom. And
I've never heard that phrase, the context is queen. That's fantastic.
And we think that OAO operating at a strategic level can help build those relationships. That reception marketing is the new way we're thinking about, you know, how we talk to our customers about going to market. Is you've got, forget about permission marketing. It's just really another form of interruption now. And if you really want to get to reception, you have to be very specific. Corvette shows are a place for reception marketing, right?
Well, but, I'm glad you mentioned this, because it's so true. And I'll use a very similar analogy. I'm a Tesla guy. I own a Tesla Model Y. I love it. I went out looking for an luxury car and an electric vehicle, and it was the only thing that hit all the boxes. Yeah. And guess what? One of the emails I actually do open periodically in my inbox is from Tesla.
Yeah.
And I love that product because they solved a problem for me at the moment I was looking for it. And that's what you're saying in terms of content and context. Serve the right content at the moment the consumer is looking for it, and you will have a relationship with them.
That's right. And, you know, I'm the opposite car guy from you. I own a 1971 Toyota FJ40.
Oh, killer. Those are nice cars too.
Yeah. And I love it. In part, I love it because you can't operate a phone while you're driving and it's three on the tree. And, you know, there's certainly no airbags and you don't trust the seatbelt. So you gotta use all your senses to drive.
I had a car like that in 1981 and it was great.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, when I'm on YouTube or Instagram and I get served up things for Toyota Land Cruisers, that's what I'm looking at.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a lot of stuff that gets served up that's just paid advertising that's interruptive. And so,
yes,
you know, back to your earlier question, knowing your consumer and focusing on what they're looking at and where they are is critical. We know all of our consumers are online at some point, and we suspect that most of them are meeting us as brands online. So where else can we meet them? Maybe in an unbranded setting, maybe in a branded setting, but maybe farther up that journey than just ready to click to buy.
And so your argument would be the brands that will be successful in the future are the brands that engage with the consumer early on in their consideration process with valuable content.
Absolutely.
I love it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about you real quick.
Yeah.
What gets you up in the morning and what energizes you to refresh you?
Yeah. So what gets me up in the morning right now is honestly this job, number one. And part of that, I'm new to the company. I've been here about 6 weeks, but I love the people and I love the products and services and the problems that we're trying to solve. I love being in a high growth environment. You know, talking to executive recruiters over the years, I'm like, if you just need a good steward, I am not the right guy for you. Like I have no interest in being the steady hand at the wheel. We need to tack and jive a little bit. That's what's more interesting to me, figuring out how to get to the best performance. My personal purpose is to help the people around me perform at their best. And so, you know, I love people. I've been involved with the Naval Academy and their Alumni Association and Foundation for a period of time. I conduct interviews for Naval Academy admissions. And then my kids and my wife and dogs are really, really cool people. My daughter graduated from William & Mary 2 years ago. She's with Teach for America out in the Bay Area in California, cool. Teaching first grade to a very interesting set of students. And my son is a first-class midshipman at the Naval Academy, getting ready to commission in the Marine Corps in about 40 days. So, and we love travel, in particular, U.S. national parks. I love to fly fish, do a fly fishing trip every year. And I do a college football trip every year with a different set of guys. So
that sounds fun.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot to keep me engaged and active.
All right. Follow up question. Which is your favorite national park? Because I'm an avid outdoorsman climber myself.
Yeah.
I've been to many.
They're all fantastic. I've probably spent the most time in Yellowstone because I've taken family vacations there and also fishing trips, you know, fish around. And that whole Montana, Wyoming, Idaho area is just great fly fishing. You know, there's something really lovely and special about Acadia and Yosemite. You know, Volcanoes National Park, if you can get it when the volcano is going off, is really, really spectacular. Denali is fantastic.
Well, we could talk about national parks for a long time.
Yeah.
I'll wrap you up with one question. Looking back to Dave when he was in the Marine Corps as an artillery officer to today, what do you wish you'd known then that you know now?
The power of networking You know, I spent the early part of my career just wanting to do a good job and excelling and taking care of my people. But there's so much to learn from everyone. One of my core beliefs is that everybody has something to teach me, but, you know, I've got something to teach them as well. And that exchange of information is just really rich and really compelling. And, you know, having as many loose tie relationships as possible, as well as the strong tie relationships, is just, it's a way to learn more, to, you know, engage your curiosity and to push yourself forward.
I love that. And so true. Oftentimes you get a chance to meet someone and engage with them, maybe even a relatively superficial way, but you maintain contact, and what do you know? They end up being a key partner in the future.
Yeah, that's right. That's absolutely right.
All right. Well, if somebody wants to get hold of you, Dave, what's the best way to do it?
Probably the best way is via LinkedIn. There are not a lot of Menifees, so you can find me there. Pretty responsive there. I still, against my better judgment, have an active, I can't say the new name, an active Twitter account. Or you can email me at TerraKeetDMenifee@TerraKeet.com.
Excellent. Well, Dave, I just want to thank you so very much for being with me today. I've enjoyed our conversation, and we've uncovered another personal connection in our love of the national parks.
Yeah. It's great to spend time with you, Marcus. I appreciate the interview and the opportunity.
Well, thanks for being here. And thank you, everybody, for joining us today. We hope you enjoyed the content. We hope you enjoyed getting to know Dave a little bit better, and we hope to see you next time. Have a great day, everybody.